88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guests I have in the studio, a couple of St. Landry Parish gals, two really very talented artists, Lori Henderson and Trish Ransom. And their art, I always use the term whimsical, but there's a lot of terms you could use to describe their artwork. And what I like about both of them is that they repurpose materials. If you see Trish Ransom's work, her line of jewelry debris, you'll see old bottle caps, old telephone wire, rusty things could be a part of your neighbor's vehicle that was hit in the back end. It could be all kinds with her fish and her armadillos and other creatures. Lori, I see repurposing a lot of fabric. And there's also materials when you do paper mache that's being repurposed. So welcome, you two.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here today. The two of you share some similarities in terms of your background, your current lives. But you both came into being full-time artists as a profession after, you know, working in other careers for quite a long while. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with you, Lori. You designed ultrasounds? Was that your?
Well, not designing. I did more of a. I was an ultrasonographer. I did cardiac ultrasound.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, ah. And I worked at the place where they made the ultrasound equipment, and I was like the customer in house, and so I got to really get to know what the cardiologist wanted, and then I would have the engineers design it, and I would check up to what a customer needed. I was like an intermediary.
Oh, yeah.
But I used my art because it was about creating beautiful images. So I always had like that aesthetic of how can we make it really easy to use and really beautiful.
Yeah. So, how did you go into that as a profession? Where did the thought come that, gosh, I want to do this?
Well, my daughter is now going to be 36 this year. Sorry, B. but when I was pregnant with her, I had an ultrasound. And I'm like, I want to really learn how to do that. So I really wanted to be an OB ultrasonographer. But the school that I was living when I had her when I was pretty young, and it was only for cardiac ultrasound. And so I said, okay, well, that will do.
Yeah, let's do that. The heart's a beautiful organ.
It is a beautiful organ.
And everything that goes in with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you did that for how many years?
Gosh. Let's see. 25 to 40, so whatever that is.
Yeah. And you did artwork as a child. You got involved in doing art?
I was always doing art some way. My sister is super creative. So she was older than me, and we were always on some adventure making leather things or batik dyeing or, you know, always some kind of creative endeavor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, since I'm real little.
And this was all over the country? Where did life start for you?
Well, it started on Long Island. And my dad worked for Grumman, and he worked in the space program, so on the lunar module. And so we traveled, and I lived in Texas and Florida and different places. So
where they had, yeah.
Yeah, in Texas for the launch and by Houston. So I was into the rodeo when I was 10.
Oh, no.
Pink cowgirl shirt and hat. And then we lived in Florida when the launches started.
Yeah.
And then my dad worked on the F-14s and lived in Iran. But that's where I was old enough to moved to Germany, and I've lived all over the United States in different places. So
yeah,
wow.
And now here in Louisiana,
I'm home.
And now, yeah. And Trish, for you now, you spent quite a few years in the corporate world of a large department store.
I worked for Macy's in California,
And I was like Lori. I was always doing art when I was a kid. I still have finger paints from when I was in kindergarten, paintings that my mom saved. And I remember in the fourth grade, the teacher said, if you finish your academic work, you can make art. And, man, I whizzed through my work, and I had art all over the classroom. It's just what I always wanted to do. And I sort of got sidetracked because I got good grades and ended up doing kind of an academic thing. But I got to college. I was going to be a nurse. And I got
you went to Stanford? You were out in California?
I did, yeah. I'm a California girl. Grew up in the oil fields, oddly enough, so I feel right at home here.
Sure, sure.
And lots of people that I talk to here actually know where my hometown is. It's west of Bakersfield because they have been posted there at one point or another in their careers in the oil fields.
Oh, interesting.
Another reason I feel at home. And it was horse and cow country, and I'm thinking about Lori and her cowboy clothes, and I have pictures of me when I'm a little kid in my cowgirl skirt and my cowboy boots, and always rode horses, and that's another thing I love about living here.
Yeah.
It's horse country up by where I live in St. Landry Parish.
You did, though, in your first profession, though. I mean, the arts, you had to have an artistic eye for what you would do as a buyer.
Yeah, I am one of the few people who actually has a degree in art from Stanford. And I did not find a job.
What do you mean you're one of the few people?
Well, one goes to art to be an engineer or a space
designer. Oh, to Stanford
designer,
to do that?
Or
okay,
a mathematician or an astronomer or something. You don't go there to be an artist.
Okay.
But that was just my passion, and that I just couldn't live without having that part of my life. So that's what I ended up majoring in. And ended up in retail because in the area I worked in, I was in the home furnishings area. So I use a lot of art in setting up room displays, in selling fabric, in coordinating designs. And then I ended up being a rug buyer, an assistant buyer, and I bought handmade oriental rugs. So I used my art all the time.
Yeah.
And it's been very, very helpful in what I do now.
I'm curious, when you went to art school, what medium did you have a focus that you did? In your degree that you were working on?
I focused on graphic design because at least that seemed sort of practical. But I enjoyed my classes in geology. I took every Shakespeare class there was around. Because when you assigned a major, you have to take classes in the colleges that are not your major. So you had to take something in the sciences and something in English and you had to and all those sorts of things. And I just remember meeting with the most interesting people from such a variety of places there.
Yeah. Did that whole time that you were doing that profession, were you creating art at all yourself?
I did on the side. If I would move into a new house and I'd need something for a wall, I would make something for my wall. But in all honesty, when you have a corporate job, when you're working 60 hours a week, that takes a lot out of you.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of creativity left. You're just trying to kind of keep the whole program rolling forward.
Yeah.
But on the weekends, I would go to art festivals.
You appreciated looking at it.
And appreciated looking at it. So it was always a part of my life.
How about you, Lori, when you were working in your previous life in your profession, would you create art during that time separate from work?
My art was always found in my home because I live in a pretty colorful house. And so I always created art in that way. And like you, Trish, it was like a left brain, right brain thing. In my work, I was left brained. I was very function, having to do projects, having to go through releases, having to travel. So
having deadlines
to meet all
the time, right. Goals to meet all the time.
And so when you're in your right brain or creating, it's kind of a circular motion. It's not linear. And so I was starting to create I did a whole watercolor series before I quit my job. And then it was like I was drawn, but I needed a certain amount of time to get into it. And I never had enough time off of work to get to the circular creativity
thing. Because what I want to know from both of you is what occurred or what happened in your life that took you to that decision, you know, kind of what you're talking about, whoever wants to go first. But, Lori, kind of what you were leading into, you know, generally there's whether it's an incident or it's a discussion, a conversation, or you observe something. I'm curious what happened in each of your lives. Heck, I'm going to take a chance here and You don't have to raise your hand here, Trish, but we will.
Go, Trish. I want to talk.
But the studio recognizes guest Trish Ransom.
Well, this was just such a nice segue. I couldn't resist. I was at an art festival, and I heard this fabulous music, and I go around the corner at this art festival to the stage, and there's this fabulous music, and I said, what the heck is that? It turned out it was Zydeco. And I found a place in the Bay Area where they taught lessons. And I would go – I could go to dances 3 or 4 nights a week because there's so many people in the San Francisco, Oakland area who moved out there during World War II because there were good jobs.
Sure, yeah.
In the shipyards and the meatpacking from this area, from East Texas. And their kids and grandkids were playing Cajun and Zydeco music. So someone finally said, you need to go to Louisiana where the music is from. And so I came once to Festival Acadien, and there was a great art show, fabulous food, great music. I met the nicest people. So that's how I ended up in Louisiana. And
but there, was there a point in your career, in your job that you had then in that career where it was just like, okay, I'm done with this? And I'm going to tell people, and if you'll see it if you look on her website, but the thing I always remember about Trish and her one comment was that she never wanted to have to wear pantyhose again. Unless she chose to.
In retail, there was a dress code. You had to have sleeves. You had to have the aforementioned item. And, you know, you had to dress a certain way. And it was such a regimented life. And I sort of got to my midlife crisis and thought, I don't want a different job. That's more stress. I don't want a red Corvette. I'll just sit in the freeway going 5 miles an hour. A bunch of other things I tried. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to move. And 1 year I came to Louisiana 8 times. And I really felt at home here. I had a great time. I met the nicest people. People here are friendly. Family's important. And so I just decided, I'm just going to move. And I did.
Yeah.
I just pulled up stakes and found a great house, Gran Coteau's, halfway between Lafayette and Opelousas, halfway to the dance halls either direction, and just moved.
Yeah.
And then when I got here, I was kind of, you know, painting my house and painting all the colors I'd always wanted to have instead of Navajo white, which would sell if I ever decide to sell a house. And I went to a little funky folk art gallery in Opelousas, and I had some old bottle cap earrings on, and the proprietor said, do you think you could make some of those for my shop? And that was the critical point right there. I started going out and picking up junk and making earrings, and one thing led to another, and now that's all I do. I go to art festivals, and I teach art to kids. And
okay, now I'm going to get back to some of that. Lori, I'm curious for you. Was there – what occurred that I'm professionally that I'm going to change what I've been doing professionally?
For me, it was gradual. I was making a lot of money, and it was hard for me to leave that. So, but I was at this crucial place.
It's scary. I mean,
it's scary. It is scary to take that leap. I also started coming to Louisiana, and that's where the watercolor series came from, is Dennis Paul Williams. Seeing Dennis Paul's work and him playing with the Zydeco Cha-Cha, Nathan and the Zydeco Cha-Chas, and seeing his I don't know, the lifestyle of being able to do a couple of things. And so I quit my job kind of at the same time I'm married 9 years tomorrow to Tom Pierce. And so he had a dream of starting a fiddle shop.
Yeah.
And when he retired, and so he was in classes for that. And I said, well, I want to do that too. And so so we're like, okay, let's dream together. And so it started slowly for me. I left Phillips, which it was like a great job because I felt like I was doing the world a good thing. And part of who I am is about making a positive change in the world. And so working for this ultrasound company and making a great product made me feel like I was on purpose.
Yeah.
So art for me was harder to get into because it felt a little frivolous.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
And then – so I had this whole – so I've been a kind of –
frivolous, like what's my purpose doing this? I had a purpose before that I was giving something to the world. And,
yeah.
Huh.
And so – but art gives so much.
I know. But it's been my like
battle psychologically.
But you had to learn that.
It was a slow process for me, and now I'm just kind of like, because I'm doing this shamanic study and my art, it's finally kind of firmed up that it's not just art for me. It's a spiritual thing. So therefore, it's become more than – but it started – it's a fits and start. Trish would see me again and again, and I'd go to the festival, and I'm like, "You're really doing it. You're really doing it." She's so inspired.
You'd
me.
See her. You'd see her at a booth.
I would, and I would talk to her. I'm like, "How'd you do it?" And she would give me some tips and tricks, and she's just like so good at what she does, and I so admire you, Trish. And
oh,
so that
wow,
I was
you.
Looked at that. And before I even moved here, I would ask her questions. And she was always very generous with me. And now I'm kind of at this juncture where it was like I was ready to make the change. But I then started consulting. I took a job with a drug company on doing a medical research project. And I had 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So then I started creating on my 2 weeks off. So I had enough time.
Hmm.
And then I started then working back with Phillips as a contractor. Again, like 1 week on, 3 weeks off.
And were you living here then?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, 2008 happened, and then there was no money, the crash or whatever. And I was like, oh, no.
I know.
So then I learned to live with not a lot of money.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
But you know what's interesting, though, Lori, is, some of this piece that you're talking about in that a number of different artists that I have talked to have had to really search within themselves to make that decision to pursue their artistic profession because of funds, because of money. And that's an interesting piece for you that it was about – that sense of self and what am I giving to the world? I mean, that's an interesting piece that you needed to work through that in order to be okay with this as a profession. Money aside, it's like I need to feel comfortable that this is a good thing for me in the world to do.
And it's very vulnerable. Being in a corporate job, you get feedback for doing what you do and you get paid for it. But as an artist, you're really exposed. You're out there behind stuff that you've created, and maybe someone's going to get it or not get it, like it or not like it, and you can't take it personal.
You have to learn to not take it personally.
Yeah.
In my old life, I always think about my life in California. I had a dog show dog, and one day the dog would get best of breed, and the next day the dog would get thrown out. And I learned that it's what one judge might like, another person might not. It says nothing about the character, the quality of the animal. It's just that that particular judge prefers the dog to have this kind of characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such good training for going and being an artist, because some people really get that I make art out of junk, and it's very cool. Some people get they like fish, so they get it on that level. Some people are looking for a present for a guy, and a fish might have beer bottle caps in it. And they get it on that level. But I'm so lucky that I do something that has a wide variety of appeal. But I did learn that some people get it and some don't. And it says nothing about who we are or the quality of what we do.
Well, and you're one of the artists, whether it's that I have met, that whether it comes from your previous career business-wise or that's just who you are as a person, you've really been able to transfer over from your other career, but also put into place that whole business aspect of this profession, which is probably one of the most difficult things for so many artists to do. And I know that that's something that a lot of not just Lori has learned from you, but that's been a big piece, I would
a very
think,
big piece.
For you being successful and being able to continue to do this full time.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
I'm all those mornings I got up every morning going, oh, rats, I have to go to work. Ugh. That turned out to be so valuable because I know how to keep track of my inventory. I know how to pay attention to what people are wanting to buy. I watch what people are wearing, having worked in retail, because if red is in, I find that I might sell more red kinds of things. If beige is in home decor, then maybe I might sell more neutral kinds of things. Mm. I know I need to have things at $3 as well as things at $300. And I know how to set up a booth to pay attention to way is the traffic pattern, because the wall that is seen first is the one that I need to make my big statement on about what I do and what my art's about. You know, those are the kinds of things that you learn in retail that have come in so handy. And I'm very compulsive. That helps, too. I put all the redfish in one bin and all the bluefish in another bin. But when the bluefish bin gets empty, I need to make some bluefish. You know, I mean, it sounds nuts, which it probably is, but it works.
Yeah.
And I love what I do. I wake up every day feeling so happy.
That is so evident. Every time I see Trish, she's always like, so happy. You're one of the hardest working, happiest people I've ever met.
Makes you want to throw up.
No, because when you think about it, you know, you think about doing those shows. Those shows are, I mean, I've done those.
It's hard physical work.
It's a lot of physical work.
Yeah.
And you've got to pack and unload and repack and haul and.
See, all those weekends of Zydeco dancing, I dance in the morning, I dance in the afternoon, I find some place to go dancing at night. All that stamina got. I guess I built up stamina in order to lift boxes and schlep things around.
So, Lori, as you were working through feeling comfortable with pursuing the art, what transferred over from your previous job that has added to some of the success that you're experiencing? Are there some things that transferred over?
That's a good question, Cheryl. I used to work in a marketing department, and I was able to use those skills for my corporate job. No, never. I couldn't transfer them. So, no, I haven't been able to. But it's kind of like iterating for me. I almost fight what Trish is saying. Like, I don't want to make something that somebody wants. So it's I'm kind of like a rebel when it comes to it. And I'm fighting the not wanting to do the art show booth thing. So now I have my work at two different galleries, which is working for me. And now I'm kind of learning that I do have to make things that people will buy.
Well, it's a trade-off. I make the, quote, commercial kinds of things so that I can make the stuff that comes out of my heart and my soul. And that's I can make those things because it makes me happy and I'm inspired by a certain piece of junk I might find. So it's kind of a balance of.
And don't you think that's totally individual? I mean, that's every artist based on what they are creating, what area of the art world that they have become involved in.
But also,
you figured out what's worked for you.
I also have to be very practical because people ask me why I work so hard, and I say, well, it's really simple. If I don't work, I don't eat. You know, when you work as an artist and that's my sole source of income, I sort of have to be a little bit practical about it, and as well as getting to do the kinds of weird things I really like to do. And I'm also very lucky in that I was at an art show, and someone said, would you consider teaching this to children? And I said, oh, sure, and didn't really think about it till they called a year later and said, I wrote a grant, and I have you teaching 4 art classes. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what do I do now? But I've been doing it for 8 or 9 years, and there is nothing more fun and inspiring than giving hammers to small children and see what they come up with. It's just remarkable. It's amazing.
We're going to take a short break, and because I'm going to come back and talk about some of the classes that you're doing. We're going to listen to a cut since both of you were coming here dancing a long time ago. Years and years ago.
Yeah.
We have a cut from Chris Hardwan, actually, he and his brother Sean, from the CD Turn the Page.
I loved them.
Yeah, they're terrific.
Still do, but they were playing together, and Sean was on the drums, Chris on the accordion, double clutching.
Yep. And that going back and forth. Yep. This is Talk Talk.
Everybody wondering who that band is, them live sounds coming through the radio and out the clubs in Southwest Louisiana, Southeast Texas, and Houston. We about to let you know who it is, baby. Now here we go. Everybody, won't you gather round? We got something for you, got a brand. try some.
Chris Ardoin with Sean, his brother Sean, on drums and vocals, and that's Talk Talk from Turn the Page. And if you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. Please check out the website. Listen to your favorite show again. Catch the shows you had to miss. And also, we are a listener-supported radio station and a public service of the University of Louisiana here at Lafayette at Cypress Lake Studios. But you can help us out. We want to thank those who do all the time. There, you can go to the website, Safe Secure, donate button. Click on that, and it'll take you through what you need to do. My guest in the studio today, visual artists, Lori Henderson and Trish Ransom. And Lori, before we went to break, you know, we were talking with both of you about your art and kind of the journey of getting to where you are at. I want to talk about what your art is, because your art comes in many different forms.
Yep.
So if somebody said, yep. I mean, because seriously, if somebody said to you, so Lori, you're an artist, like, what do you do? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I didn't have a good elevator thing. It was hard for me to talk about it because it's so varied.
And on different levels.
On different levels, yeah. So I do mixed media sculpture, and most of them are like expressive faces or birds or fantasful creatures. And that is all using recycled materials, too. So I use old found boxes, and I'll put things, or I'll – and I make birds, a lot of bird themes, and I consider that like a spiritual thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
So my art has multiple facets. It's just fantasful, fun, mm-hmm. and it's deep and spiritual. So I have this whole side that's, you know – dreamlike or subconscious stuff. It's brought me to where I am now on a spiritual journey.
I want to ask you a question. In terms of how you pay attention, now they really are one, mm-hmm. your spirituality,
yes.
your art. But what came first in terms of what you were conscious of, what you paid attention to?
It was definitely an aesthetic of fun.
Okay.
The fun aspect of creating things out of my... When you're in a creative space, it's kind of like a joy place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of you want to hang out in there.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened first. And then that brought up some healing that occurred. I think art is also healing.
Yeah, that's right.
So then it brings up some stuff that you mm-hmm. may want to take a look at, go a little deeper. And then it got into another level where I'm now making petroglyphs or sewing things for a spiritual reason, but they're still...
Say the term again?
A petroglyph.
A petroglyph,
yeah,
okay.
Like, you know that back in the days they would write in the caves?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of like I use fabric like that.
Got
and
it.
Make these little spiritual... I have one on today, a little mermaid.
Very cool.
And so they're kind of symbolic. And then I do all these fanciful hats. And so I have like... I'm all over the board. Like doing
You're
all kinds of things.
Those hats are very popular.
Thank you.
You see them all over the place.
Well, they're made with sculpture wire, so they're like a walking piece of sculpture that you can bend and twist and turn and, you know, make it, you know, tight or full on shade. And I usually put some weird kind of twist on it. And I use all recycled materials, so I have all these wonderful people that see me and say, oh, I got a bag
got
of material
bag for you.
And I'm like, oh, right. And so my instead of having a studio, I have a palette of fabrics that are color-coded on
oh, interesting.
In my studio. So I kind of use that as a palette.
Well, and you also – paper mache is – I mean, you know, that process you
yeah.
use in some of your artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come – when did you start learning how to work with that medium, with the paper mache?
Well, when I was still working in the corporate job, I found these artists that I so love, the Wazo sisters. And they're just amazing, fanciful artists. And they teach classes. And I went and took a class with paper mache and paper clay and using, you know, 3D sculptures and how to make, you know, they showed every technique. So I kind of learned all their techniques and then made it my own.
Yeah. So how do those ideas come to you for a piece? Are there images that you visual? Does something all of a sudden appear like that you visualize? Or how does something come together for you?
It's like a meditation. You know, when Dennis Paul Williams said, art is my meditation, that was like a quote that like, bam, it just got me in my heart because I never plan anything. I just start to create something. Then there's like a happy accident. And then, oh, a shaman bird came out. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And so that's what happens. It's never like I never plan it. And so when somebody says, could you make such and such and such and such? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'll try. But that's why it's hard for
me
to say.
Yeah, that would be a real response for you.
Yeah, because it's kind of like never anything two of the same and never. So it's kind of like for me to go into a production is hard because it's all a meditation. It's a flow. It never has a start or an it, and I know when the end is, but I couldn't tell you when it's going
to
happen.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that listening to the two of you talk, what I think of right away is the difference in songwriters, where there are some songwriters where they have to just have when that piece comes to them. And then there was those songwriters who like head to Nashville and it's 8 to 5 and they go sit in a room with two other people and boom, by the time you leave, you better have so many songs. You know, I mean, you know, that's a whole different way of how that art form is approached. You seem like you would have a hard time if somebody said wanted to commission you, I want this specifically, let's.
Yeah. And so that's the whole other thing is like, I've been trying to be an artist in an art booth and I keep going with the art booth, trying to do it, and just I just can't get there. And I would come to Trish many times. And so now I bought this Sprinter van, right? And I said, well, I'm going to create what I need to be an artist. So that means an art studio that you open up the back of the van, and I have all the stuff to create. And then we have like artist chorales. So we call the artists, and everyone chorales, and then kind of like a happening. So I'm going to – isn't that an awesome idea?
It's
like,
yes, it
like
is.
Like a pop-up
right?
art market
yes,
kind of thing.
Yes,
yeah, like a pop-up art
like,
market.
Like, you know, the
yeah.
art – you know, like the food trucks?
Yeah.
It's
well,
flash mob art.
Yes.
I love it.
So you want to join
wow.
me?
Yeah.
So
well, that's a cool idea.
Yeah. And then it's like it's there with you and, you know, you don't have to – and it's like a lifestyle. So I'll have this Sprinter van that has a little camper in it. I can go to different places, open up the back and have my hats and – my mixed media sculptures and my little fabric studio.
Yeah, because for you, it's like who knows when the idea comes. I mean,
who knows what's going to be
and
next.
What's going to come out? Yeah, exactly. That's a great idea, Lori.
Wow.
I'm curious, Trish. What do you think about as she was talking in terms of her process, how that works?
Well, 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. I mean, I have the things that I make that occurred to me for one reason or another, but people will ask me to make something that's really foreign to the kind of materials that I use. I think, how in the world can
such
I
as,
do
that? Like, do you remember an
well,
example?
I make things in nature, armadillos, turtles, fish, and people always want dogs and cats. And that is doesn't – the materials I use don't seem to lend themselves too well to that. So I have made them. I enjoy making them. But it's work. I had to think about how I could – change what I do or incorporate what I do and still feel honest about what it is and that it's truly something I made to make them. But, you know, I like doing nature things, wild critters, armadillos, turtles, snakes.
Yeah. You get up each day, though, and you go to work.
I do. I run myself like a business. I get up in the morning. I have really good ideas
Lee
in the morning.
Lee Tedrow does that, the furniture maker. Lee Tedrow does
that. Oh, I bet
does
he does,
that.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Oh, he's a master craftsman.
Yeah, but I mean, you guys just remind me of each other in terms of how your routines work.
And I, like I said, I have really good ideas in the morning. I get up and I organize all the ideas. And I have little piles of ideas all over everywhere. I'll find some little trinket or something that sparks an idea, and I'll start collecting things that work with that, colors and other materials. And I'll get that all organized. In the afternoon, I kind of get a little creatively brain dead. So that's when I go to the market and I do the laundry and that kind of stuff. And then I sort of wake up again after dinner and I work till midnight or so. And a lot of times it's actually assembling the ideas that I've gotten together in the morning. And people ask me, how long does it take to make something? And it's not really a linear process, because I've gone out and I've picked up the bottle caps, and then I've washed the bottle caps, and then I've put them all in bins by color. Like Lori has all her fabrics organized. I have my materials all organized by color. And getting the idea organized is the part that takes a while. And then I have to figure out the engineering of how I'm going to get it to all stick together. So the putting it together part's the easy part. And I would imagine for Lori, it's sort of the other way around. With paper mache and making your hats, it's twisting the wire to make the hat, to make it the shape that you've envisioned, or in which way it's sort of evolving, you know?
I never envision it. That's
it evolves. It evolves as
usually,
you go along.
And I'm not.
Yeah, but that's an interesting comment you just made. You don't envision it.
Because her materials are a lot more fluid than I work with rigid materials, metal.
Yeah.
And plastic and wood. And you work with very fluid materials.
Well, some of the sculptures are more solid, but even those have a, you know, like I made this whole puppet show, and somebody said, well, how did you envision the puppets? Because the puppets are nature. They're the sun and the moon. And I do a whole puppet show about using my Peruvian shaman work that I've been doing. And so it's kind of like, well, it's my art and it's this. But it's definitely a three-dimensional thing, but they have a I couldn't have told you how I did it. I couldn't do another one, you know? I haven't been able to, like, say, well – and so I have somebody that's commissioned me to do a puppet of them. I'm like, well, just so you know, it's not going to look like any of these. So I don't – and then I don't work every day. I'll work – and Tom can attest to this. My house turns into the studio, and then it contracts again. Trish inspired me for that.
Oh, no.
And it contracts again, and I don't work for maybe a week or 2 weeks. Then I work again really a lot, and then it's like an accordion. Because I do, like, then I'll be doing other things. I work on a nonprofit, and I'm doing – you know, I have 8 grandchildren. I got
you
lots
have
of
8
different
grandchildren.
My
too.
Daughter has 8 children.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm like, I love being Yaya and you know, spending as much time as I can with them. And so I have like segments. So it's not, and I always looked at Trish and I was very envious of her work ethic. Because mine is more of I have a show, I have to.
Yeah, but can that be okay too?
I think it's both.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
it's both. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And if we had 3 other people sitting in here, you would find 3 more, you know, different ways of how they work and what their process is and how their work style, their day set up, you know?
Yeah, I don't think there's one way to do it. And you know,
but that's the interesting thing about creativity, huh?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, if I'm over making fish, I'll go make armadillos for a while. And then if I kind of run out of armadillos, I mean, just because I have to be a little bit practical, because I've got to put all the fish stuff away and get all the materials, the cheese graters and the muffler pipe and all the stuff I make the armadillos out of. And then all these armadillo ideas come out of my head. And sometimes I'll even have to quit because I don't have any crawfish. And I'm going to the crawfish festival and I need some crawfish. So I have to put all the armadillos away and get out all the crawfish stuff and make them for a while. But
yeah.
You know, just looking around me, I can't go for a walk without picking up stuff off the ground. Mm-hmm. And like Lori, I have this wonderful bunch of people who are willing to contribute. It's just amazing. And they'll give me things I'm like, what in the world am I going to do with that? But, you know, something always occurs to me. it's really, it stimulates the imagination.
And it's staying out of the landfill, and it's up yes. off the sidewalk yeah. or up off the road, yeah. you know. That's yeah. that's another positive about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I was in New Orleans, and I brought these little mixed – I was at a costume bazaar with my hats, and I made these little sculptures to put on the hats. And the guy said, what is it made out of? Well, it's made out of my recycled aluminum that I cook with. You know, I don't throw it out or recycle it. I make it into little faces. So it's kind of like, you really want to know?
Yeah, I know.
You know, Lori, I remember when I first met you, I remember the comment coming out of my mouth that I'm really intrigued by what you used to do and what you do now and what goes on up there in your brain. You know, because what you just talked about in terms of saying I never like really know what I'm going to. You had to know, though, in your other job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that, I mean, that's because you really are at two extremes with how you approach and how artwork comes out of you, I guess I should say, versus how your other profession came out of you.
Yeah, it was very black and white, linear, scientific. And so I do have both of those working actively in me all the time. And so I'm kind of learning to take a middle road huh. or stay more gray in both.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like I still have the capacity to do that left brain stuff.
Yeah.
Which makes me pretty good at creating a brochure, creating something, you know, working on the computer, you know. But it doesn't help in the way I create in the art world because I'm not linear there. I might cut out a bunch of stuff and then it might have like, I can't even tell you how it happens.
Well, I remember the very first time I saw an art booth that you'd put together, and you'd made these fabulous tapestries to hang in there that were absolutely astonishing. And you were sort of cavalier, say, oh, this is just a hang in the back for some background. I'm going, oh, those are the most marvelous things.
And
I've
everybody
ever seen.
Wanted to buy the tapestries and not the art because I didn't know how to make the art shine. I had the whole booth look like my house, right?
It was fabulous.
It was weird.
So I'm thinking of pursuing art full time. What would you tell me? How do you do it? But I'm nervous. I'm scared. I'm not sure how to do it. And of course, this isn't me talking.
Well, first of all,
you
have to do something you love, and that you have an affinity for. Some people are more three dimensional. Like Lori really manipulates things into three-dimensional shapes with the hats and the scarves and the faces that she does. And some people are more two-dimensional. They like working with an implement like painting or drawing. You have to do something that you love to do.
Yeah, it's like Joseph Campbell says, you have to follow that bliss. And nobody can be you except you. And so what is it that is you really you that makes you joyful? Like Trish yeah. said, I'm so happy every morning I get up. That's what it is. So only you know what that is. And then you have to follow it even if everyone says you can't do it. Or you're never going to have enough money or you're going to starve.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I got sidetracked because from when I was a little kid, all I wanted to do was make art. And I come from a family of practical people. Both my parents grew up during the Depression, and so they had very practical jobs. They knew that if they wanted to get out of poverty, they had to go to college and get a good job, and so both of them did that. So they were very, very practical. I was supposed to be a nurse or a metallurgist or something along those lines, and all I ever wanted to do was make art. And so I got sidetracked for a number of years and was just putting one foot in front of the other. And then when I got here, I kept thinking, oh, I'll get a real job. After a while, I'd sold my house in California, and so I could kind of afford to paint my house and hang out and get to know my neighbors. And then one thing led to another, and I just sort of fell into being an artist. But
I'm curious about a couple of things that you said. The real job, practical. Since you have been working in the art field now for quite a while, have you seen how people view art professionally change? Have you seen it become – because why can't working as an artist as a profession, why can't that be the practical thing? Why, you know, has that Has that evolved at all in our society, in this area?
Well, I'm going to digress just a little bit and tell you I was at a festival, a very, very nicely run festival in Shreveport, very well done, called the Red River Revel. It's a juried festival, which means someone looks at all the art, and so it's a fine, high-quality festival. And a mother's dragging her little boy along and said, you know, if you don't study and do well in school, you're going to end up here in a tent like these artists. And I was so offended because yeah. I thought, you know, a third of the people here have college degrees, at least. And they have chosen to do this. It's because they love it, because they're good at it. And people could buy a piece of art at the dollar store. There are prints there are sculptures there, whatever. But they come to an art show because they want a personal relationship with the artist. It's meaningful for them to get to know the person that they're getting the art from. And you start to hear stories like, everything in my house washed away except your fish. Or I need to buy an angel that can go on a tree that my daughter ran into where she died. And I can hang your angel on the tree because it's made out of cans. And you start to realize it has meaning for them. And it's not anything I really started out to do. I'm going to get all teary-eyed. But it does have meaning for them.
I believe it plays a big role in society. Art does.
And then a friend of mine, I'm talking about how lucky I feel, and I've made such wonderful friends in the art world, including Lori. I mean, we share Zydeco, we share art. It's really remarkable. And to have your friend's artwork in your house, you get to go home every day and feel like you're among your friends. And I think people kind of feel that way about the art that they purchase for their home. They can look around them and recall the experience at the art show. Maybe they were on vacation or remember that fun night they had drinking a certain kind of beer that the fish happens to be made out of with friends. But it has meaning, I think, and it enriches their lives because so much of our lives are spent putting one foot in front of the other. That you need to find the things that give you some joy personally, whether it be art, whether it be music, or mountain climbing or jogging or whatever. You need to find some things that give you personal joy for your mental and physical health, I think.
Well, I'm reading this book called The Gift, and, you know, it's making me think about a society and a gifting society versus a sitting on your money society. So as an artist, it's like you're given a gift. Creativity is a gift. It's not like I'm making it happen. It's not me. It comes through me.
Yeah.
It's like the closest thing to what you want to call universal consciousness. This is a creativity. So when I am gifting something, it's like then you realize that everything is energy. So I get money for my art, but then I'm going to buy someone else's hand-grown vegetables that creates the gifting society. Yeah. And here in this area, we have a lot of the beauty of a gifting society.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, and all over in the native cultures, they had the more you gave, the richer you were as a person, as a family, as a culture, as a community. And so being an artist, you're in that. You're actually learning that the more money and the more security doesn't make you happier. Giving more makes you happier.
Yeah.
And if you're actually in relationship, like what Trish said, to the person and the gift of her art that made a difference, it makes her cry, makes the other person tear up, and they're coming from that heart space, what else is more important?
That's right. That's right. And you know, I always look at – and I've heard this from so many – people in different professions, that for them, having that piece of art or pieces of art in their office, that's what inspires them on that project they're working on or for the next project. If they get stuck, they sit back, they stare, or they listen, you know, whatever the art form is, and boom, that's what keys it for them to get to that next step of what they – for that presentation, you know, they have to do that evening. We'd be a sad world with – you know, without art.
Yeah.
Did you talk to the woman, Trish? I'm curious to the mom. Yeah. Did you say anything to the mom who said that to their child when you were up in Shreveport? Listen here.
But you better believe that all the other artists heard about it, and we were all just really offended because it's it comes out of your heart. It comes out of who you are.
Yeah.
And I meet the most interesting people doing this. It's just a remarkable. I mean, the people I talk to at art shows, of people from all walks of life, all over the country, that art is
and where your
that's
art
necessary.
Gets like who buys it and where is it where it went. I mean, I had like this famous movie star that bought one of my pieces, and I'm like, oh my god, I watched him on TV. That kind of stuff. I'm like, wow. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does make a difference.
What are you working on now, Lori? What's coming out of you? I shouldn't say what
are you
working on.
Well, the Sprinter van is being birthed right now. So I'm
doing
all of this.
That's your art piece right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm doing an art van. I have another artist that's going to be assisting in the creation. Thanks, William.
And that's William Lewis, a sculptor.
And he's helping me with doing the conversion. And then I'm doing all the thinking of the electric. And we live in this awesome culture where there's amazing people that know everything around here.
Yeah.
Tony Adrian, who's helping me understand solar. And
he's a mad scientist. He's a mad scientist.
So he's given me a little device to figure out how many watts I need for my DC battery.
But how great that you have.
Yeah, so that's kind of my new thing, is getting the Sprinter kind of like and dreaming that dream of how I want to bring my art forward. And so I've even asked for one of the art shows I go to every year, can I bring the van and open it up? Is that okay? Because I don't have a tent anymore.
And what was the response?
I don't know yet.
Oh, you don't know yet? Yeah. See?
So I don't know what the spring's going to bring, but I'm taking it on a road trip in another couple of weeks for its trial run.
And it's going to be interesting to see what that inspires.
It's called the moon.
What starts to go, huh?
Yeah, it's a big white moon. So if you see me coming, wave.
It's fun. I will see Lori driving down the road. Well, I go walk my dog every day out through Grand Coteau. There's Lori driving down the road, and she waves. And now Curly Taylor driving down the road to his dad's. He waves. You know, the arts are so alive where we live. It's really remarkable.
Yeah. It's amazing talent.
That's right. What do you have coming up, Trish?
Oh, I've got a big spring schedule of all kinds of shows I'm going to be going to and
you hit
teaching
the road.
Some art workshops,
Is it art workshops through the library systems?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's another thing. I didn't realize I liked to teach until I fell into doing this. And, kids don't learn how to use tools anymore. And here I'm traipsing into the nice, quiet library, and I've got hammers and drills and anvils, and they're smashing bottle caps. And I don't let a kid say, I can't do this. Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's such fun to see them cutting things up and smashing them with the hammers. And it's just the most – it just makes me so happy to see this. I don't know. It sounds ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But, for a lot of years I wasn't happy. So for me to be is really a wonderful thing.
It's a good place to be.
Good place to be.
If you would like to find out more about Trish Ransom and Lori Henderson, you can like them on Facebook. And that's Henderson, H-E-N-D-E-R-S-O-N is how the end of that name, and Ransom, R-A-N-S-O-M. Lori's website will be up soon too, LoriHenderson.com. You can go to Debris Art, D-E-B-R-I-S-A-R-T.
Or you can see us on the dance floor.
Or you can see them generally wearing some of their art.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Generally wearing some of their own art. It serves all kinds of purposes. So, Lori Henderson, Trish Ransom, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on today.
It's great.
Best of everything.
It's been fabulous.
Yes,
I look forward to what comes out next. We are going to go out listening to a cut that Trish brought in from the band Trout Fishing in America. And this song is Who Knows What We Might Do. And everybody, have a good week.
He's pushing the grocery cart, looking for deals, but all of a sudden he kicks up his heels. Someone his age, just the thought of it. On the back as he takes it outside. It's a card, it's a scooter, a ticket to ride. Someone his age, who'd have thought of it? Acting your age is getting harder and harder to do.
aches that you're feeling inside's more the size of your shoe. Who knows what we might do? Who knows what we might do? She's somebody's mother in sensible clothes, but she's got a secret and nobody knows. Someone her age, just the thought of it. She put away money in the tip of her shoe, went to a parlor and got a tattoo. Someone her age, who'd have thought of it? Your age is getting harder and harder to do. With the age that you're feeling inside's more the size of your shoe. Who knows what we might do? Who knows what we might do?
KRVS underwriting announcements reach listeners with your message of support and information about your business or event. To find out more about partnering with South Louisiana's Regional Public Radio Program Source, call us at 482-5787. 482-KRVS.
I'm Poppy Tooker, host of Louisiana Eats. Tune in Saturday afternoons at 4 p.m. for your weekly serving on KRVS 88.7 FM, listener-supported public radio for Acadiana.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.